Chapter 50. The Enemy Within. John was beside himself. He sat in the stolen beige car, fuming, pinned between a red van and a blue sedan. Somehow the boy and his companions had gotten away. He had lost a gun, but he had more. He was also out of sorts because he'd passed out. It had happened a few times in the past while performing much more difficult and dangerous jobs. But now some books had worked him over, and the people who had done it were getting away. Well, John wasn't having it. He tried to pull out onto the shoulder and around the van in front of him, but the vehicle was too close. He tried to back up, but the sedan was only inches away. It honked, letting John know that it couldn't back up if it wanted to because of the cars behind it. John swore. He was most angry at himself. To get tricked by a couple of kids and a loon was an embarrassing blow to his devious pride. John swore again. He threw the car into drive and pushed on the gas. His bumper hit the van, and he accelerated even more. The van moved a couple of inches, honking its horn to let him know that what he was doing was extremely unacceptable stuck-in-traffic behavior. He jammed the gears into reverse and flew backward into the sedan. The airbag in the red car went off as John gave his vehicle gas and pushed the red car back a foot or so. There was more honking from a number of cars as he put his into drive again and rammed the van with force. He backed up into the red car again and turned hard to the right. His inconsiderate driving had created just enough room for him to weave around the van and race up the shoulder toward the man with the yellow hat. The road worker waved his hand and lifted his sign in a frantic gesture. If he thought his sign would stop John, he was dead wrong, which is why he jumped off the shoulder and into the bushes in an effort to not be dead. John scraped up against two of the vehicles in front of him as he flew up the shoulder. Passing the first car in line, he swerved back onto the road and raced with purpose in the direction that Ozzy had just gone. The road was absent of any other cars, leaving John free to floor it. He took four turns faster than the sign suggested he should. Screeching around another corner, he could see something in the distance. Up ahead on the side of the road was Ozzy with his wizard and Siggy. John's eyes burned with anger as he tried to push the gas down even harder. He focused on Ozzy and saw him jump off the road into the trees with the others. What he didn't see was the black bird who had just flown up under his car. Using the knowledge he had recently acquired from YouTube videos and books, Clark grabbed onto an engine mount and then twisted up on top of the engine and began biting at wires and hoses. He wasn't impressed with the engine of John's car. He also wasn't sure where the fuel line was on an early 2000s beige Corolla, so he just kept biting and tearing. He missed the fuel line but did a bang-up job of cutting the brakes and three of the four spark plug wires. The already underpowered engine began sputtering, firing on only one cylinder. Inside the car, John realized that now might be a good time to stomp on the brakes and slow down. Unfortunately, the brakes were no longer working. He tried to turn, but the steering wheel was locked. The beige Corolla kept flying straight toward where Ozzy and the others had entered the trees. John screamed as the car launched off the side of the road into the forest. Chapter 51. Through the Bushes and Into the Dark. Running frightened down the tree-packed slope, Ozzy and the others could hear trees cracking and screaming as momentum, inertia, and gravity hurled the beige car down toward them. They scrambled madly out of the way in hopes of not being hit. Trees snapped and flew forward, barely missing Siggy in the wizard. The car hit a tree big enough to stand its ground, and the front of the vehicle compacted like a tin can, leaving it wedged between at least a dozen smaller trees. Ozzy and the others were only a few feet away from where it had come to a stop. "That was too close," Siggy said, shaking and on the verge of tears. Through the cracked windows, they could see John in the front seat. The airbag had gone off, and he was angrily trying to get out of his seatbelt. But his restraint was jammed, and he was stuck tightly in place.
"You'll pay for this!" John yelled.
"You should quit while you're ahead," Rin said.
Clark crawled out from under the bottom of the car near Siggy. "I accidentally cut the brakes," Clark explained, "and the steering, and some sparky wires." Rin smiled.
"I'm glad we're friends and not enemies."
Up above them all, where the car had flown off the road, they saw people looking down at John's vehicle.
"Are you okay?"
a man yelled.
"That's our cue,"
Rin whispered. They turned from the car and ran away from any attention, farther down the tree-covered slope. The ground was so steep that their descent was more of a controlled fall than a run. They bounced and spun between trees, letting gravity move them. Rin led the way, Ozzy right behind him, and Siggy in the back, Clark zooming all around them.
"Keep going!"
the bird yelled, sounding like an uncaring coach. After what felt like just shy of forever, they slowed their pace to a lumbering jog and tried to catch their breath. Rin snagged his robe on a low-hanging branch for the 10th time, causing him to almost lose his footing. He pulled his robe free from the branch, and it flew back, hitting Clark squarely in the beak. The bird flew backward a few feet and then zipped forward, nipping the wizard on the fingers that were holding his staff.
"That's my conjuring hand," Rin complained.
"How would I know?" the bird squawked back. "I've never seen you conjure. And what would it kill you to change shape every once in a while?"
"Who said I don't?
If you do, it's probably into something lame like a broom."
"Hey," Rin said defensively as he ran, "have you ever tried to sweep an entire castle without one?"
The wizard continued to move through some tight trees, Ozzy and Siggy right behind him.
"Can you tell us where this shortcut is?" Ozzy asked.
"No."
"Is that because you don't know?" Siggy said.
There was a long pause as they all stepped carefully through a wide patch of scrub brush and tall bushes.
"I know," Rin finally answered, "and it's not far."
Clark wanted to change the subject.
"Do you think that bland guy will stop following us now?"
"He doesn't seem like the kind of guy that just lets things go,"
Ozzy observed,
"even if he's been taken down by a bird."
Rin's robe got caught again and he jerked back and fell to the ground. His hat came off and his staff smacked him on the head. Ozzy and Siggy stopped to help him up.
"Thanks. Trees have always been an ally," he said, confused. "It seems now as if they're conspiring to take me down."
Clark chastised the wizard.
"I don't think you're wearing the best running through the woods frantically clothes."
They all took a moment to stand still and further catch their breath. The trees around them were an avocado green, filled with birds complaining about them traipsing through their private and secluded woods. The air smelled like pine and sweat and uncertainty.
"Would you please knock it off?"
Clark yelled at the birds. They didn't listen.
"Well, I tried," Clark said. "I'm not Ozzy's parents. I mean, it's not like I have the ability to control the minds of other birds."
Everyone stared at him as he sat perched on a branch.
"What?" he asked. "Too soon?"
"Come on," Rin said, beginning to run again. "It's not much farther."
Ozzy lost his footing and took a turn tumbling onto his back before Rin stopped him.
"Do we really have to be running?" Siggy asked.
I don't think anyone's following us.
We're not running to escape something, her father said. We're running because time is perishable. Come on.
Everything began to close in as the tops of the trees prevented more and more light from reaching them. The slope ended abruptly, and then they were standing in a stone-filled ravine. A small trickle of water ran through the stones and gave the quiet forest a background gurgle. Ozzy was used to all the forest running, but for the rest, it was taking a toll. Rin tried in vain to appear in control and wizardly as he hacked up a lung.
Where are we? Ozzy asked.
Lost, Clark suggested.
Not lost, Rin coughed. This way.
The wizard walked west down the rocky ravine. Ozzy and Siggy followed, stepping carefully along the trickling stream of water and wet stones. Overhead, long branches blocked most of the sky from view.
Here.
Rin turned and walked directly into a wall of bushes that were growing on the stone wall of the ravine. The growth parted and swallowed the wizard whole.
What, the shrub?
Clark chirped. Ozzy pushed into the bushes, following Rin. Siggy clung to the back of his shirt with Clark in her hair. Everything was dark for a few moments before Rin turned on his phone's flashlight. In awe, Ozzy looked around. Siggy did the same as her father moved his phone to light up more of the space.
It's a little dark for my taste, Clark complained.
The space they were standing in was a large cave, filled with a cool dampness. It had a high ceiling and a dirt floor peppered with small stones. To the left, they could see the mouths of three dark tunnels. To the right was a big rectangular space with a thin pool of water on the far side.
What is this place?
Clark flew up and hovered in front of the phone's flashlight.
Is this where you live?
No,
Rin insisted.
How'd you know it was here? Siggy asked.
Let's just say some heavy things happened here years ago.
What things?
Ozzy asked, wishing he were in bed or lying down.
I don't know,
the wizard said, sounding curious himself.
But I'm sure something did. Follow me.
Rin walked over to where the thin pool of water was and sat down on a flat rock near the water's edge. Ozzy and Siggy picked their own rocks and took a seat.
What now? Siggy said. Are those tunnels the shortcut?
I've always thought caves were the perfect place to talk, the wizard said without answering his daughter. In Corfelt, we hold most of our important conversations in caves.
Dad, Siggy said, could we not talk about Corfelt now? We're in trouble, and I don't believe speeches about Corfelt are going to help. You think it does, but all the magic things you claim to show us are just things that can be written off as luck.
You're encouraged to doubt, Rin said kindly. Just don't let the questioning end before the right answer arrives. And you're always welcome to just borrow some of my and Ozzy's understanding until the time comes that it makes sense to you.
Don't borrow mine, Ozzy said softly. I think I feel the same way as Siggy.
Rin looked wounded.
Sorry, I've read and reread all the books I can about wizards, and they still seem more fictional than factual. Nobody else buys into them as something real.
Are we going with what everyone else knows?
No, Ozzy insisted, his stomach twisting in knots. But one of my teachers at school said that wizards are just a lazy writing device.
I do like to relax.
And why do you refuse to ever cast a real spell? Ozzy asked. Or work the kind of magic that we need? You're about to say something that makes more sense on a plaque than in reality.
Ozzy's head hurt, and his words weren't what he wanted them to be.
Reality is not something I aspire to please, Rin reminded them.
Obviously, Ozzy said.
Clark moved from the glow of the flashlight over to Ozzy's right knee.
Listen, I find him infuriating as well,
but he did make that car fly on and off that train.
Did he? Or was it just bad driving?
I get it, Rin said. You're nervous about becoming an apprentice. You've passed 3 tests, and now, as the 4th one looms, you're getting cold feet, or as we say in Corfelt, ice nubbins.
You don't get it, Ozzy insisted. I'm saying that I can't be your apprentice because I can't accept that everything you say is true.
Don't discredit the impossible because you don't believe me, Rin said seriously. Magic happens despite what we do or don't believe. There is good, and there is evil. In life, some good wins, and some evil is victorious. What you or I believe doesn't change that. It just changes us.
Is that supposed to make me feel good? Ozzy argued.
No, Rin replied.
Ozzy stood up and walked away from Rin and Siggy and back toward the 3 tunnels. After only 2 steps away, the darkness swallowed him. Siggy got up, but Rin motioned for her to stay seated.
He needs to be alone.
Rin closed his eyes. When he opened them 10 seconds later, he looked serious and like someone who was about to tell a scary story.
Sometimes walking into the dark helps a person to see how valuable the light is.
Dad, this isn't a game.
I agree with you.
And you should know that Ozzy's not saying anything that I haven't thought in ways that are even stronger. Magic took you away from me and Mom.
That's not true, the wizard insisted. Your mother and I didn't see eye to eye on too many things to make it work.
Yeah, things like this wizard stuff.
Siggy was upset. Even in the cool cave, her face burned.
I've had no dad for most of the last 10 years, except for when you showed up to embarrass me. Do you know how horrible it is to have your father show up on career day to tell your class he's a wizard?
You're strong enough to put up with anyone who doesn't understand.
Don't, Siggy insisted. One of the best times of my life was the time in New Mexico. I was scared, confused, and overwhelmed, but what you did for Ozzy made me proud to be your daughter. Now I can't help but think you just love using rideshare apps and hiding in caves. I'm one of those people you just mentioned. One who doesn't understand.
Rin moved over to a stone right next to Siggy. His phone was still glowing, but the dark hid both their eyes and their expressions.
I can't force you to believe what I'm saying is true, he said softly. I can only say that I'm sorry you feel the way you do. And even though those last 2 lines rhymed, I mean them as sincerely as the driest poem you've ever read.
You're still sticking with Corfelt being real? She asked.
There was a long silence before Siggy spoke again. If you're nodding, I can't see it.
I was nodding, Rin told her. Corfelt is real whether you want to believe it or not. I would be a poor excuse for a wizard if I lied about its existence.
I've never heard anyone else mention it, she argued.
Do you know other wizards?
No, but it seems like something like that would come up when people talk about myths or legends or aliens or Bigfoot or conspiracy theories about nuts.
The words were meant to sting, but Rin didn't sound stung.
Yeah, he said. I do think Corfelt could have a better marketing and advertising campaign. The banner that hangs off the Capitol Castle reads, Corfelt, Cor feel the magic. Not a great slogan.
Is telling me that supposed to help me believe?
Siggy groaned.
People think you're crazy, Dad.
Well, I suppose we're all crazy in some way, Rin admitted. If I was an accountant or a salesman, they might still feel the same. As a wizard, I make it easy for them to point and laugh. But people don't point and laugh at you, Sigourney.
Siggy softened at the sound of her father using her full name.
They might pity you because of what I am, her dad continued. But there will come a time
when they will realize just how much this world needs a wizard.
I don't see that ever happening.
Rin stood up.
Do you know what I call this cave?
No. Up until a few minutes ago, I didn't even know it existed.
I call it the Multiple Choice Cave.
Why?
Because of the three tunnels that lead off this room. They all lead to three very different spots. One of them is safe, one is dangerous, and one...
One is dangerous? Siggy said, standing up.
Yes, yes, Rin said defensively. But the other one leads...
Ozzy! Siggy called out. Oz! There was no answer other than the echo of her own voice.
Ozzy!
She tried again.
He might be exploring the tunnels.
What if he went down the dangerous one? Siggy yanked her father's phone out of his hands and ran toward the tunnels, yelling,
Ozzy! Clark!
Rin came running up behind her.
Which one's the safe tunnel?
She asked, shining the light at the three entrances.
It's multiple choice, Rin said excitedly. You have to choose. That's why I named it.
Dad! Ozzy could be in trouble, and there's no light in those tunnels to charge Clark. So stop with the multiple choice and tell me which tunnel to take.
Well, it's cheating, but that's the safe one.
Rin pointed to the middle tunnel.
Wait, it might be that one. No, we should take the middle one. Ozzy makes pretty good choices, and I'm sure the middle one is the one he took.
Siggy looked at the battery life on her father's phone. Your phone's down to 19%.
Some see the battery is 81% empty, the wizard told her. I see it as 19% full.
Unbelievable! I don't understand you. Mom said that when I was little, you used to worry about everything. Now you act like nothing is wrong even when everything's falling apart.
I wasn't a wizard back then, Rin told her. Now, should we stand here and worry or run into the dark?
Siggy took off into the tunnel of her choice. Chapter 52. There are right times to scream. Siggy led the way into the thin, dark tunnel, hunched over because of the low ceiling. Siggy could feel air coming from somewhere. The air was comforting, but everything else she felt was quite the opposite. Holding the phone in front of her, she moved as quickly as she could without slipping on rocks or banging her head on the ceiling.
You might want to slow down, her father told her from behind.
Why?
Because in a moment there's a large hole in the floor. You'll need to stick to the right and scoot forward against the wall.
Siggy didn't slow. She stopped.
A hole?
Yes.
Rin confiscated his phone and took a turn as leader. He walked slowly, scanning the ground in front of him with the light. His 6'4" height required him to be almost completely bent over as he moved. His hat brushed a stalactite and was knocked off, flying back at Siggy.
Dad, just hold on to it, he instructed.
There.
The flashlight exposed a hole on the tunnel floor in front of them. They both moved as far as they could to their right and inched forward, their backs to the wall. Their feet scooted along a lip of dirt no wider than 6 inches.
I can't see the bottom of the hole, Siggy said nervously as she scooched forward.
It's deep, Rin replied. I don't think either one of us should find out just how far down it goes.
As Rin moved, a chunk of dirt broke free from the lip they were scooting on, creating a 10-inch gap between him and Siggy.
I don't like this, Siggy whispered harshly. I'm too scared to move.
Look at me, her dad said. In the dim light, Siggy tried her best to see her dad. She could see his robe, his staff, and his beard.
Wait, she said breathlessly. If you're a wizard, we should have nothing to worry about, right?
Right.
Then why am I worried?
She argued softly.
Because you refuse to see the purpose of uncertainty.
They had their backs against the tunnel wall, their arms pressed to the stone. Rin held his phone in one hand and his staff in the other.
"Do you see where you are?"
Rin asked.
"I can barely see anything," Siggy said.
Her breath was shallow from the fear an open hole in a dark tunnel can cause.
"I can barely see anything, and I bet your phone's down to 15%.
12,
Rin informed her.
"I'm scared," Siggy said bravely. "It would be stupid for me to say otherwise. I'm not going to cry or scream, but this isn't right. I'm scared, and I don't think my father is the right person to help me."
"Hold on to this,"
Rin said, extending his staff back slowly.
"And don't worry," he said kindly. "This is such a little thing. That small gap you're going to step over is insignificant. It's a single breath, a blink of an eye, or the wag of a finger. There's nothing to it. After you've moved forward, you're going to wonder why you ever paused at all."
"I hate you,"
Siggy said almost involuntarily.
"That sounds about right for a 15-year-old.
"I'm 16.
Where does the time go?"
Rin sighed contently.
"Now, just close your eyes and move forward."
Siggy shut her brown eyes and lifted her right foot to step over the missing ground in front of her. As she moved, the dirt beneath her still planted foot cracked and gave way. She screamed appropriately and yelled out a few things that most daughters never get to tell their dads. Chapter 53. Finding a spot of ink in a tube of tar. As his daughter screamed, Rin yelled,
"Grab the staff!"
The tunnel turned darker, but she caught the end of the stick and held on for dear and near-death life. Rin swung her up and forward over the rest of the hole and onto solid ground. She landed on her butt near the spot Rin had flung his phone to better hold the staff. The wizard scooted the rest of the way past the hole and kneeled down next to his daughter.
"And you thought I should have left this in New York," he said, holding his staff tightly.
Siggy was stunned. She sat on the tunnel floor trying to shake off the fear she had just felt.
"Are you okay?"
"No."
Siggy held her right hand to her chest.
"And this is the safe tunnel?"
"That's not what I said," Rin told her as he helped her back onto her feet. "I said this is the one Ozzy probably chose. The safe tunnel just leads right back out into the ravine."
"What?"
Siggy was beside herself.
"Where's the third tunnel go?"
"It goes back for about 50 feet and then dead ends."
"If we get out of this alive, I want Mom to have full custody."
"She's always been the more responsible adult."
"So the multiple choice was a tunnel with a quick dead end, one with a short turn back outside, and one that leads to death? How do we know Ozzy even went this way?"
"He told me once that he was good at tests," the wizard said. "And since this one takes us where we need to go, I figured it would be his choice."
"Where does it go?"
"The ocean."
Siggy moaned, and the sad sound filled the tunnel.
"What's the battery life now?"
9%.
Siggy had no choice but to follow her dad farther into the tunnel. There were no more open holes beneath them, but there were plenty of stones to duck under or crawl over. There was also some spongy ground near a trickle of water that ran from one wall of the tunnel and under the other. They stopped near the wet ground, and Rin showed Siggy the phone.
3%, she said sadly. "When it dies, will we have to start crawling to feel our way forward?"
Rin lifted the phone and shone it down the tunnel in front of them. He swept the light around as if showing Siggy what the last place they might ever see looked like.
"I hate caves,"
Siggy admitted.
"We should keep moving," Rin said.
This last 2% of battery might be all we need to...
What's that? Siggy asked excitedly. Hold the light forward!
She looked up ahead and saw the glint of something silver flashing under the light.
Siggy ran down the tunnel as her father jogged behind her. She fell on her knees and smiled as she looked down at the ground. Clark!
The bird's head was jammed into the soil as if he had taken a hard nosedive, and he wasn't moving.
Siggy reached up, and her father handed her the phone.
She lowered it down so that the last bit of flashlight shone directly into the silver strip that had caught her eye seconds before.
2.1%, she reported as she kept the light over Clark. I don't know if it's enough to shock him back to life.
Maybe the battery life is like a gas gauge on a car, Rin suggested. When it gets to zero, you still have 50 miles left.
The phone died, and the tunnel was perfectly dark. The choice they had made to even enter the cave in the first place now seemed grave. Rin reached down and put his hand on Siggy's left shoulder to let her know he was still there.
I'm not going to last long in this dark, Clark chirped weakly.
He had come back to life under the last bit of light.
Clark!
Siggy yelled as she brought him closer to her face.
Where's Ozzy?
I don't know. What direction is back?
The bird was whispering to conserve energy.
He was out of his mind and walking deeper into the tunnel.
Out of his mind? Rin asked.
You know, under some other control, the bird cheeped. He wouldn't snap out of it. I bit him multiple times.
Clark coughed to remind Siggy and Rin just how weak he was.
I was trying to fly back to you when this darkness... Oh no, I'm fading.
Siggy held the bird gently in her hand.
Oh,
he hissed.
There's something else. He's in.
Clark was out. The situation felt so dark, so heavy, and so hopeless that Siggy began to cry. It wasn't the kind of crying someone helpless and fragile would display. It was the kind of crying someone might exhibit when the weight of where they sat was no longer something they could carry. Rin sighed. He then mumbled something, and a sound similar to a match being struck filled the tunnel. The noise was followed by a green light that filled the space completely. Siggy looked around, wondering if she was dying and now needed to head to the light. What she saw, however, wasn't death beckoning. It was her father standing there holding his staff. The orb on the top glowed a hypnotic green color and bathed the dark walls in a comforting glow. Rin looked down at his kneeling daughter and the bird in her hand. He smiled, looking proud. He winked at his Siggy as if she were impressed. The wink was premature and misguided. Siggy swore and then took two deep breaths before standing up and shouting,
That thing lights up!
Rin took a step back.
I feel like answering that would be an insult to your intelligence, seeing how it's already lit.
Why didn't you use that before?
We didn't have the need.
Why didn't you tell me that when the phone died, we'd have another form of light?
Siggy demanded.
There's always more light, the wizard said. You just need to access it when needed. Now, let's help Clark access some.
Siggy was mad, but she held the bird out and Rin leaned his staff forward so that the glowing orb was closer to the silver strip. She stared at the green light while holding the bird. The glow was bright, with a swirling hypnotic pulse to it, and the color was green, but not like any shade she knew. It felt familiar and foreign at the same time.
How does that work? She asked, mesmerized. Batteries?
Please, Rin said with a scoff.
A wizard's staff is a tool powered by magic.
Siggy moved her head around the orb, looking for a switch or knob that turned it on.
Are they LED lights? She asked.
I don't know what that is, Rin told her, so I'm going to assume no.
Clark began to flap his wings as he came to.
Oh, yeah, that's the good stuff,
he moaned softly. With a big twitch, his talons went straight and he stood up in Siggy's hands. He shuffled closer to the orb.
Hey, Wizzy, you didn't tell me your twig could glow.
It's not a twig, Rin said. It's a staff. We have no time to waste. You were talking about my apprentice before you passed out. You said there was something else.
His mind is gone, Clark said as he continued to soak in the light. Also, he kept saying the words, this must end. That's not good, right?
I'm afraid it isn't.
Rin frowned, and both Siggy and Clark felt it. The feeling within the space changed with the wizard's expression.
Remember when I said things were happening?
Yes, Siggy said. You've said it about 100 times.
Well, then there's no need to say it again.
Rin didn't walk. He ran farther down the tunnel toward a boy that was very much in need of assistance. Siggy and Clark followed the speeding light. Chapter 54. Caves are heavy and complicated. Running through the tunnel wasn't easy. The height of the ceiling fluctuated and the ground was uneven, making any form of continually smooth motion almost impossible. Rin held his staff out in front of him, lighting the way brilliantly, while Clark circled and flew around the glowing orb. Siggy was right behind her father, reminding him that they would have already caught up with Ozzy if he had just used his stick earlier.
It's a staff, Rin hollered back.
The narrow tunnel ended in a large square cavern with an uneven ceiling. The floor was covered with flat stones that jutted up out of the ground. Under the light of Rin's staff, the flat rocks looked like headstones in a psychedelic graveyard.
Whoa, Clark tweeted. Ozzy and I didn't make it this far.
The father-daughter-bird combo walked carefully between the blank headstones and toward the continuation of the tunnel on the other side of the massive room.
This is like that park, Clark said. The one in New Mexico.
That was a cemetery, Siggy said softly. These are just blank stones.
So when people die, they're planted under the ground and given a rock to pin them down? Clark asked.
Kind of, Siggy answered as she followed her father. Except the rock is a headstone that tells people their name and when they lived. And people aren't planted, they're buried.
In Corfelt, they're planted, Rin spoke up. It's a much more hopeful way to phrase it.
I'm glad I'm immortal, Clark bragged.
You could always rust or be blown apart, Rin pointed out.
If I am blown apart, I'd like every bit of me to be buried separately with a different stone over each piece.
I don't like to think about stuff like that, Siggy said. Let's just hurry.
I don't like to think about it either,
Rin admitted. His voice was so soft and serious that he didn't sound like himself.
What's up with you? Clark asked.
Caves bring out the melancholy in me, the wizard answered. I look at all of this and think of the thousands of things that have died in my life.
You call people things? Clark asked.
Rin stopped walking.
Not people. Things.
Like staplers?
The wizard looked around.
Not staplers, Clark, just things.
As Rin talked, the light from the staff began to soften.
Life used to be so different.
Pre-wizard?
Rin nodded. Siggy looked at her uncharacteristically somber father.
Are you okay, Dad? The wizard gazed back at the room full of blank tombstones.
"People always think I've got it easy," he said mournfully. "Look at the wizard. He has all the power and influence and prestige. Well, this life requires sacrifice."
"People say that stuff?" Clark asked, confused.
"Things die, and sometimes we don't even realize it until it's too late to properly mourn. I think what I miss the most is you and your mother."
"Neither one of us is dead," Siggy reminded him.
"But in certain ways, I am."
"Wow," Clark chirped. "This room is really bringing you down."
Rin stood up as tall as he could and tilted his head back to stare at the uneven ceiling. Siggy stood next to him, holding on to his left elbow.
"You know," she said, "some of the stuff you mourn isn't worth the energy. Life will be full of many other things to distract you and cause worry."
Rin smiled at his daughter. "I can hear the wizard in you."
"Actually," Siggy said, "that's a quote from you. You wrote it on the card you gave me when my cat died years ago."
Rin stared at Siggy. The green light helped him look wiser. "You are 10 times better than I will ever be," he said honestly. "But I suppose that some of that greatness is the result of you having to accept me as your father."
"At least 90% of it."
"Come on," Rin said,
feeling renewed by his own words and the way his daughter had delivered them. Clark continued to fly circles around the glowing orb as the wizard and his daughter traveled through the tunnel beneath the surface and on their quest to find the boy. Chapter 55. No People. Ozzy stood at the edge of the ocean. His long, dark hair hung down over his eyes and obscured the view as he stared out at the blank and empty ocean. Waves reached out to grab at his toes, but he kept far enough away for any of them to pull him in. Ozzy's mind cleared. Glancing about, he realized that he was alone, standing on a beach and wondering just how he had gotten there. Looking behind himself, he saw the mouth of a cave 100 feet back.
"What's happening?"
His clear mind whirled and snapped as all the important parts of who he was and what was going on flooded back into his head and washed over his gray matter. He looked back at the cave again, wondering where Siggy and Rin and Clark were. The sea continued to reach out and call to him. In the last few days, the decision to enter the ocean had been forced upon him multiple times. At the moment, however, his mind was whole. He found himself wanting to get wet all on his own volition. He stood there staring at the choppy sea, processing the impulse to go in. The ocean meant a lot to him. It had been the place he and Clark had found happiness. It had been the place where he first met Siggy. And aside from the cloaked house, the sea was where he felt the closest to his parents. Now, as he looked out, he felt something indescribable inviting him to partake. Ozzy pulled off his shirt and shoes. The sea approved of what he was doing, the waves making a fuss and the water churning. Running at full speed, Ozzy charged in, his legs pushing against the waves until he was deep enough to lunge forward and swim. The turbulent ocean absorbed him and, for the first time in weeks, he felt better. Even on his best visits to the beach, he had never felt the charge and warmth he felt now. The cold temperature of the water didn't even register with him. Instead, a syrupy happiness enveloped him. He swam out until the water was 3 times as deep as him. He then stopped and bobbed up and down in the wild sea. Ozzy stared west. Ahead of him, there was nothing but water. The Pacific Ocean stretched out over 5,000 miles before it touched the shores of Japan. The distance was far too great to see past or swim to, but for a moment, Ozzy contemplated doing just that. The answers, the closure, the wholeness he sought seemed connected to the wild liquid he was now floating in. There was something out there that he needed to understand. Ozzy turned to look back toward the beach. As he spun, an uneasy sensation brushed up against his right ankle. The sensation increased in pressure. It felt as if a thick hose was wrapping itself around his leg and trying to pull him under. Instantly, the warm feelings he had been experiencing vanished. Ozzy reached down and frantically pulled at what was holding him. His fingers closed in, and he could feel a strong, rubbery rope of water coiled around his ankle, wriggling downward. The movement pulled him under. He squeezed the strange water, and it broke up and released him. Needing air, he tried to swim upward, but was stopped when a second strand of liquid moved in and encircled his waist. The lasso of water pulled him down farther. As before, he dug his hands into it and it broke up. Ozzy kicked fiercely until his head pierced the surface of the sea. He gulped in air, imitating a fish left on land, as four more strands of killer water reached out from below and took a hold of his legs and arms. Ozzy fought the thick vines of sinewy H2O, but with his arms restrained, he couldn't stop them from dragging him down. Both hands were held tightly by meat hooks of liquid. He tried to scream, but that only served as an invitation for a long, invisible rope of water to shove itself down his throat. The strange rubbery strands seemed to have a destructive mind of their own, dragging and pulling him deeper. The ocean churned, and his body, though submerged in water, felt like it was on fire. Ozzy bucked and kicked, but the fight was futile. The watery ropes only grew stronger the more he struggled. The thought of this caused Ozzy's eyes to flash open as he was being towed farther down. He blinked calmly in the dark water. Then, remembering the feeling of security and purpose he had felt only moments before, he instructed his mind and body to relax. Going limp, his finger buzzed. The thick water gripping his left hand relaxed and was smothered by the ocean. Ozzy reached his free hand over and touched the wet ropes around his right arm. Immediately, they unraveled and joined the greater body of water he was sinking in. With a calm mind and burning lungs, Ozzy bit down on the liquid in his mouth and throat while tearing methodically at the water holding his legs. The strange strands burst like rubber pipes, releasing the boy. Ozzy swam up. He reached the surface without an atom of air left in his lungs. Sucking in oxygen, he bounced up and down in the now calm ocean. It took a dozen deep breaths for him to feel normal again. He looked up at the cloudless sky. Ozzy felt no worry or fear. The struggle beneath the water had changed something in him. He wasn't worried about John or the cloaked house or if anything else was lurking beneath him. He twisted in the water to face the shore, and in the distance, he saw two things worth swimming toward. Chapter 56. Dragged down, but not under. Clark was the first to see the light. He shot away from the glowing orb and raced through the last stretch of tunnel like an avian bullet. The bird burst out and flew straight up into the cloudy sky. He shook and twisted in the heavy wind. Stretching his wings as far as he could, he closed his eyes and rocked up and down on twisting currents of invisible wind. Feeling free from the oppression of the tunnel, Clark chirped loudly before diving back down to Earth. On shore, Rin and Siggy emerged from the tunnel, happy to leave behind the darkness they had just experienced. They shed the oppressive feeling of the cave and filled their lungs with air.
"Where's Ozzy?"
Siggy hollered to her father as she surveyed the empty beach. Rin looked down at the ground and pointed to a set of footprints. The two of them followed the tracks, running and scanning the ocean ahead of them. At the water's edge, they found Ozzy's shirt and shoes laying on the sand.
"He's in the water?"
Siggy asked in disbelief, her voice heavy with fear. Clark dropped out of the sky and landed on Rin's right shoulder.
"Did you see him?"
Siggy asked the bird.
"See who?"
"Ozzy."
The wizard pointed at the small pile of clothes.
"That's his shirt and shoes."
"Is he still wearing trousers?"
Clark tweeted.
"I'm sure he is," Siggy said. "Good, my pocket is attached to those things,"
the bird reminded them.
"Also, I know how squeamish you humans are about nudity." "Thanks for understanding us," Siggy said sarcastically. "But pants or no pants, Ozzy's in trouble."
"But it is pants, right?"
Clark wanted to clarify.
"Not no pants."
Siggy ignored the bird and began to walk into the water, looking for any sign of the boy who had made her life so crazy. She pushed quickly through the small waves near shore. There was no sign of him. She walked farther, and the ocean appeared to grow bigger and emptier with each step. When the water was at her waist, she stopped. The waves rolled around her, making it hard to stand still. She glanced back at her father on the shore, and he waved in a manner more fitting of a family vacation than a missing person case. Siggy shivered and felt the entire ocean close in around her, causing her to feel like she was only a speck in the vast wet world around her.
"Ozzy!"
she hollered into the windless sky. It had nothing encouraging to say. The watery sand beneath her feet shifted as each wave thumped up against her and then traveled on to the shore. Locking her knees, she planted herself and gazed with a Sauron-like intensity over the ocean. There was an abundance of water and waves, but no... Her eyes locked in on something. It was 200 feet out and directly in line with where she was standing. At first glance, it appeared to be a small circle of seaweed. At second glance, it was something much better. There, coming out of the calm ocean, was a dark head of wet hair.
"Ozzy?"
she whispered. The temporarily lost boy rose out of the water while moving closer. From a distance, only seeing his head, he looked like a different Ozzy than the one she had seen only an hour before. His wet brown hair was pushed back, and his wide shoulders broke the surface of the sea like a stone pillar being thrust up from the ocean floor. Clark came in from behind and landed on Siggy's hair. Together, the two of them stared at the shirtless stranger emerging from the rough sea.
"Oh my," Clark whistled.
"Same,"
Siggy managed to say.
"I mean, well, same."
Ozzy was slowly getting closer. Siggy suddenly wasn't sure how to act. She had just seen him in the cave, but the tunnels and conversation and everything else she had walked through since then felt like another lifetime. Now, the boy she cared about was wet, shirtless, and staring at her.
"He looks different," Siggy said to Clark.
"Yeah,"
Clark replied,
wetter.
Ozzy pushed through the ocean at a steady pace, and in a matter of moments he was 50 feet away from them, the water level just below his waist.
Oh, good, Clark said. He's wearing pants.
Siggy felt the wind on her damp, curly hair. She felt Clark jump down from her head and perch on her shoulder. She felt the waves trying to push her over. But more than anything, she felt happy to see Ozzy.
Are you crying?
Clark asked as he leaned forward to look at her eyes.
No, Siggy insisted. It's just spray from the waves.
Yeah, same here.
Ozzy stopped fewer than 5 feet from them. He smiled in a way he had not done in quite some time. The look only made him more appealing.
Are you okay?
Siggy asked. I think I am, he replied.
You look weird, Clark chirped. Did something sting you? Or were you bitten by a shark? I've heard that those kinds of things can change you for life.
Ozzy smiled at the bird, but left the question unanswered. We need to get to shore.
Good, Clark said. Being over water still makes me uneasy. What are we going to do on shore?
Get a boat, Ozzy said. There's something out there, and I need to find it. Clark complained loudly and with attitude as they returned to the shore. Ozzy let the bird vent as he held hands with Siggy and prepared himself for the fifth challenge.
Chapter 57. Bound and Determined.
Impressive, Rin said. I can see from your aura that you've accomplished the fourth task.
Yeah, Clark twerked. He does look friendlier.
Ozzy, Siggy, Rin, and Clark were walking north up the shore on their way to find a road or a ride that could take them to the marina. The world felt different than when they had last been together. The wizard filled Ozzy in on what he and Siggy had been through in the tunnel, and Ozzy tried his best to describe what had happened to him beneath the sea.
So your staff can glow? Ozzy asked Rin. Among other things.
Like what?
Like turning stop signs, Rin said.
The sun was giving up and beginning to drop as late afternoon forged on. I'm curious about the fourth task I completed, Ozzy said.
What was it?
You learned to let go, Rin answered. What happened beneath the water could have happened less pleasantly. But you let go, and calm followed. Congratulations. Only one more task to go.
Does the last challenge involve him lending you more money? Siggy asked.
No. If only it were that easy.
Whatever it is, Ozzy said, I just hope I'm aware of it before it happens.
I'm sure you won't be, Clark said. Rinnie will just wait until you do something and then claim it was your test.
Wizards don't claim things, Ozzy said, defending Rin. They state them.
Oh, Clark chirped defensively. Way to throw me under the nest. So, no more making fun of Mr. Wizard?
At least not in public. Ozzy held out his hand, and the bird landed on it. It had been a long day filled with parades, kidnapping, and caves, and they still had a hike to get to the marina.
Maybe we should call Mom, Siggy said. She can come pick us up.
My phone's dead,
Rin sounded relieved about his phone's condition.
Even if we find a road, how far are we from the marina? Siggy asked.
Best guess, the wizard mused. 10 miles.
10 miles is a long way to walk, Siggy said.
I wouldn't worry about it, Ozzy suggested. Somehow, we'll end up where we need to.
Whoa, Clark tweeted. You sound like a mini whiz. That stringy water must have really worked you over.
Fly ahead, Ozzy said. Try to find the closest road or building.
Normally, I like people to say please, the bird told him. But you sound so sure of what you're saying that I feel compelled to skip the formalities and just...
Go!
Ozzy insisted. Clark shot off the boy's shoulder and up over the trees growing alongside the beach. Rin stopped walking to smile.
What? Ozzy asked. I'm just so proud. It takes most apprentices years to boss people around.
They walked farther north for a couple of minutes before the bird returned. The only road anywhere is straight through those trees, Clark pointed with his left wing. It's covered with that stuff. What's it called? Black ground?
Asphalt, Rin answered.
No need to swear, the bird said. It's still a road. They hiked in the direction Clark had pointed. The trees in their path were thick, but in less than half a mile, they found the road. It was narrow, with bushes on both sides. They began walking north.
It's getting dark, Siggy said.
It's going to get much darker, the wizard replied.
Maybe we should go home and tell Mom what's happening, Siggy suggested. She's got to be so worried.
She knows you two are with me,
Rin reminded his daughter.
Exactly, Siggy replied.
Besides, the wizard added, it's not going to take us long to get to the marina.
There was no audible poof or flash of smoke, but like magic, a vehicle could suddenly be heard from behind them. They turned their heads to see a small white van driving toward them. Rin didn't hesitate for even a second. He stepped into the middle of the road and lifted up his staff.
Halt!
He called out. The van rolled closer, coming to a stop 10 feet away from the wizard. Wide rays of sunlight were bouncing off the windshield, making it hard to see who was driving. The door opened, and before they could react, there was John, holding a gun and smiling. The sight was so shocking that they all froze. John looked far more remarkable than he had when they had first met him. He had scratches on his arms and a big bruise on the left side of his face. His clothes were torn in a couple of spots, and his messy hair didn't look bland. It looked ridiculous.
Everyone in the van, he said angrily.
Ozzy looked at Rin and shrugged. He returned his gaze to John and said,
okay.
John, Siggy, and Clark all looked surprised. Rin didn't. They had needed a ride, and now they had one.
Okay, John said suspiciously. First, I need to lock up your bird.
Clark wanted none of that. He shot up into the sky and disappeared. John swore while looking around nervously.
Don't worry, Ozzy said. He's not coming back down. He just doesn't want to be locked up. That bird is a mess, John said. Drop the stick and let's have all of you turn around with your hands behind your backs.
With no fight or arguing, Rin dropped his staff and they all spun around and put their hands behind their backs. John cautiously bound their hands with a roll of packing tape he'd pulled from the van.
I didn't expect you three to be so agreeable, he said, motioning for them to climb in. Ray will be pleased to hear that you cooperated.
Rin laughed.
What's so funny?
Your confidence, the wizard replied. If you knew what this girl and boy are capable of, you'd release us and join our cause.
You need help, John said, shaking his head.
And you have come along to provide it.
The three captives climbed into the back of the van, and John shut the door. Rin was squeezed tightly between Ozzy and his daughter. John put the staff up in the passenger seat and then started the van and drove them all east. John held the gun in his right hand and the wheel with his left. He repeatedly looked in the rearview mirror to keep an eye on the three misfits sitting uncomfortably on their bound hands.
Marina del Camp,
Rin called out.
What about it?
John asked.
That's where we'd like to be dropped off. You have no idea how annoying you are.
That's not true, Rin said kindly. People tell me all the time.
John just wanted this job to be over. He wanted to close the book and never deal with any of his current passengers again.
Is this a new van?
Rin asked loudly.
I know a bird who's interested in cars. Shut up.
John pressed on the gas pedal of the van he'd stolen only a half hour before. After he had been pulled out of his beige car, he'd thanked one of the kind Samaritans who'd helped him by taking her vehicle. He knew that the police would be looking for a white van, but he also knew that he'd be finished with it in no time, and then they were welcome to it. John looked up out of the windshield. He wasn't a superstitious man, but he had a couple of wishes he hoped would come true. One was that the helicopter he had arranged was ready and waiting. The other wish was that he would have no further run-ins with any metal birds. Far, far above the van, two little eyes kept watch on the moving vehicle. Two little eyes attached to one metal bird who was more than ready to ruin any and all of John's wishes.